Welcome to the Winners and Losers radio program on Fridays at 7 a.m. featuring John Case, myself, and my good friend and co-host Karen Valentine. Today's program introduces Jan Haver, a leader and longtime, lifelong Shepherdstonian, and to talk about Shepherdstown Shares. Well, we're gonna organize a little local chapter of the Alliance for Retired Americans, which is a national retirees organization affiliated with the AFL-CIO. And we're gonna have a breakfast. Actually, it's gonna be more of a brunch because it's a little late for breakfast. And on I think the first Sunday in June. At the Martinsburg Diner. Anyway, so.
So this,
but you're not retired.
I didn't know when you started out if you were like leading into a joke or.
No, this is very serious. Yes, yeah, come on. I don't know. Well, everybody's seems to be wanting to do it. I mean, there's my little AI bot. I'm going to get rid of him. Just something about him just annoys me. I don't know why. Let's get rid of that.
I'm fine with that. Yeah, get rid of him.
Yeah. Anyway, and this is... Okay, all right.
I think that's a great idea. I know of a lot of people who find those types of groups... just kind of the routine and just the chatter, I think, is good to keep your brain functioning.
Well, that and we would like to. A lot of the retirees organization, they hang together just a lot of times just for well, yesterday I could drive, but today, no.
Right.
You know, and I might need some help getting to the. American Legion Hall or whatever. So, now I find that because I don't like, because of my macular degeneration, I don't like driving at dusk, you know?
Sure.
Sort of the contrast is bad, but anyway. So I get help from my senior friends, you know, who come by. Take me to a meeting or something.
Sure,
we had a somewhat humorous labor board council meeting last week. I said, we're waiting for Jan. I sent Jan to last night and this morning. I assume she wrote.
Oh
me.
Yeah, she'll be here.
Okay. And Andy Walters, who's a state's secretary treasurer of the state AFL-CIO. Anyway, he came up and he was, you know, was talking about, well, apparently there's some kind of spat between Craig Blair, the state senator in Berkeley County, and Patricia Rucker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And mm-hmm. because I think Rucker said that she was going to try to take over the finance leadership from, I think Craig, anyway, but anyway, they had a dispute. And so, the guy from, who's our delegate from, Espinoza. Yeah. So Espinoza is now going to challenge Rucker in the primary, in the Republican primary for state Senate. Because he's friends with Craig Blair, I suppose, or maybe he doesn't like Patricia Rucker either. My impression of Patricia Rucker is that she's evil but not stupid.
My take on it is that Patricia is, though we may not agree with her politics, she doesn't put up with much, and corruption is something that she is very much against. What she is for sometimes is, in my mind, corrupt, but but she will not tolerate, backroom corruption.
Well, what's the evidence of that?
She's a little bit more on the forefront, and I think that had something to do with she and Mr. Blair's conflict, that there were some deals being made, and she does not like that kind of nonsense. So I will give her that.
Okay.
It was Craig Blair, I believe, who talked Espinoza, because Espinoza was not going to run. He had already decided.
I see. Okay. He was not going to run. He was going to stay where he was, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So something happened in the past week, 2 weeks.
Yeah. Anyway, I heard that.
Changed things.
Anyway, so that was a vacancy. Per Espinoza's seat. And when he came here, Andy was saying that there's no Democrat that could run that could get within 20 points of winning. And so we're going to hunt around to find some less than terrible Republican to run in Espinoza's place, if we can. And I don't know what that means, really, seriously, but whatever. he said, and everybody laughed at him, and he said, hey, look, guys. Well, there was two women there, too. He says, we don't, there's no forward progress or anything. All we're doing is trying to stop shit. Stop it from getting worse and worse and worse. And, if you can... you put a guy that's going to vote with you like a third of the time versus someone that's going to vote with you none of the time versus that kind of thing, right? Those are the lousy choices that appear. So,
right.
I don't know. Anyways, this drives me nuts.
I don't know either. I was shocked when I read in the journal that Espinoza was going to run.
So... But if he's going to run, he is working for Rockwell now. So I wonder if they want him to run. I don't think he would do so without their permission if he's working for him.
I don't either.
Yeah.
What is his,
he's a PR guy.
Oh, he's PR guy.
There's probably more to it than that. I don't know though whether they probably wanted to, because of the protest, I think they probably wanted to buy some political support. And, what companies do. they have money, so yeah, maybe we can buy support. Yeah. Anyway, I think they did that. But I don't think that, that corporation is interested in. The big problem with Patricia Rucker is charters. Is she's trying to wreck the state education system, and she's serious about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't see how the Rockwell type of company would be interested in that. Or being nailed for that or something. That doesn't seem. Maybe, but I don't. Doesn't look like it to me. But anyway. Probably.
It's going to be interesting.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's going to be interesting. That's all I can say. I think the whole climate is just. I think nationally, how that filters into locally and people's motivations. I think is going to be more than fascinating this time around.
Yeah. I hope we can survive it. But, it's weird because the economy, all the economic data, I saw the unemployment figures went down again. I mean, I don't know why they're all complaining about people coming across the border. They need more workers. So, I mean, where are they going to come from? And then I read that the chatbots are going to somebody
kill
had an
all,
article
so going to
are gonna wipe
it.
Out 300 million jobs. I said that's bigger than the U.S. workforce. I mean, what? But seems a little.
I said they're going to kill us all, so we don't have to worry about any of this banter.
Right, I know. Right, to take over. I'm sorry, your appearance at your work is no longer needed. We have a bot that's going to do that. It is going to do some stuff, but mm-hmm. I've been working on using it. You know, actually, I have this Facebook thing called Socialist Economics, which has basically just a long list of articles. But I found out that ChatGPT can go read the articles for me. I mean, I can feed it the article, and it can just automatically, it'll create summaries, okay, if you tell it to. And you can tell it exactly what you want, you know, give me the top three topics, don't spend more than less than 50 or more than 200 words, write it in the style of Charles Dickens. The report.
Right. I mean, hasn't that been about with college?
It doesn't.
You know, is anybody going to be able to write a paper?
Well, you know, did I tell you my grandchildren that are in the San Diego school system? The school system, at least in some of the courses, is taking the approach. Okay, go look up. Your assignment is to write an article on the U.S. Constitution or something, okay? And go give the assignment to ChatGPT and see what it says, okay? Now, and attach that as a source for your paper that you're going to turn in, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So you make everybody go get the chatbot's version, all right? And then, okay, now what's your work? And so you basically put it on the students to distinguish themselves from, you know, what the chatbot might have said. Since you sort of set the okay, everybody's got a chatbot now, so just okay, that'll be the new floor.
Right.
I thought that was a better approach than trying to ban it, because I don't see how you're going to ban it. You know, really, how are you going to do that?
Well, banning is—it's just a difficult thing. Like the governor of Montana that just banned TikTok. How is that enforceable?
Well, I don't know how he can. I guess he can have. You can have all kinds of state hosting services block access to some bunch of, you know, website URLs. You can do that. I don't know. He's mm-hmm. being sued. The U.S. users, there's some organization of U.S. TikTok users that just sued him today. So, last night. So it'll. We'll let the our wonderful Supreme Court rule on that one.
They're on it.
They are on it, man. They're just. I see they. Everybody was filing suit about Google and I can't remember the other one. Their liability for falsehoods that users might publish on their website. And of course, the Supreme Court said they don't have any liability for that. You know, so
yeah.
There goes that one. They'll have to replace the Supreme Court to get rid of that. I mean, I understand it at one level, because I don't know how you would really enforce it. You know, like Facebook has 4.5 billion users, okay? You know, are you really going to give Facebook either the... you have to monitor and determine what is safe or unsafe posts. or what is false and true and false posts, including all the advertising. Come on. I mean, the essence of ads is lying.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. How are these things enforceable?
Yeah, I just don't see how you can. Maybe ultimately that's the grounds on which, you know, okay, yeah, we might agree that, you know, it would be nice to avoid certain kinds of misinformation. I mean, and in certain areas, the platforms are responding to that. I mean, they do some things better than they did before, but. But how would you going to make it? God, just imagine. You couldn't. You'd have to shut up. They would shut the platforms down if they had that liability.
Right.
They would. You know, you couldn't. The risk would be. Oh, matter of fact, it would be certain you'd be sued. Okay, because you can't with billions of users.
It'd be a litigious train wreck. I mean, there's no getting out of that one.
Right. Go back to your landline, folks. Okay, just.
Wouldn't it be fun with the corded phones and the dial?
We're going to go back and give AT&T back the regulated monopoly. You know, and just get rid of all these cell phones and smartphones. Just the hell with them. And while we're at it, let's...
There's something nostalgically peaceful about that.
Well, it's like when John Henry, right, was hammering with the steam drill, trying to beat the steam drill down.
Mm-hmm.
Hammered himself to death. So, I don't know. Can you ping Janet? She really was up. She told me yesterday about it. But.
I know. Let me send her a text.
I mean, and I definitely send her two invites to her email to the email that I have, unless she's changed her email.
No, because we were on a group email and we got it together.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I'm sending her a text.
Yeah. Wake up.
How was your week, John?
Oh, it was pretty good. We had some good shows this week. I mean, Janet came on and we did a couple of really nice poems. One called Happiness, one called Kindness. You know, it was a little alter world. Actually, Jane Kenyon and a poet named Naomi Shihab Nye, they're both great. Naomi, she's a Palestinian American, and I think she lives in San Antonio. And she came. I think we took the kids in Quaker Meeting one time to see her, and she was reading in Frederick. And she's quite a performer too. We had a young boy with us. I remember he was like maybe going 14, 15, you know, just, you know, going nuts, teenage going nuts, whatever. And didn't want to go listen to a couple of poems. Didn't want to do this. Didn't want to do that. You know, but he came along with the group and we were in like the second row, and she came up and she was starting to read a poem, and he was like fidgeting in his chair. Okay. and so she noticed it. Okay. And she looked right at him and says, "I have a story for you." She did. It was a poem, but it was actually just read like a little story about an incident at her at a airport terminal, and a woman who was not well understood and got very upset because she was speaking in a language nobody understood, and she didn't understand why the plane was delayed, and you know, she got semi-hysterical. People want, you know, the airport guards are starting to call her to think she was crazy. They were going to call the medics and the cops and everything. And finally, they found Naomi, who had who recognized that she was speaking Palestinian, and she was hysterical because she was supposed to catch a plane and to Albuquerque, and she was going to get surgery. She had a surgical appointment, And she thought if she missed the plane, she would miss the whole thing. And so nobody just understood her except Naomi understood her. And so once they found out what the issue was, everybody calmed down. And the lady, you know, she stops crying and gets upset, and she goes into her bag and she takes out all these two things. She takes out a big plate of Middle Eastern style sweets. I can't remember the kind of cookie. They're covered with that little white dust, you know, the little sugary dust. And
buttered sugar.
Or confectioners are kind of very fine. Anyway, so and so the woman takes this out, you know, and she starts handing out to all the people at the terminal, thanking them. Only one of them understood her, but once everybody did understand her, everybody got back to being civilized, right? And so she gave them all a gift. And and then Naomi noticed that inside her bag with the cookies, you know, was a little plant in a, like a little, you know, what do you call it, vase or whatever. And that she had brought with her all the way from Israel, Palestine.
Oh, wow.
And it turns out that that's a widespread Middle Eastern tradition. You know, if you're going to be relocating someplace, take something with you that you can plant.
Interesting.
Anyway,
they don't get stopped with TSA. I guess if they take a seed.
Maybe. Well, I don't know. But anyway, the boy that was sitting right next to me just became enthralled in the story. Okay. He really did. You know, she got him good. So,
good.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, you probably.
Well,
you know.
Sometimes it is just, when you're in a situation like that, it's, you have to be the distractor.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's what she did.
Right. Well, she just, you know, she was a person, when you talk to her, she makes a connection with you, you know, she looks right at you, you know, it's like, it's a little bit like listening to a speech by the president of the mine workers there, you know, man. You ever get a chance to hear, I'm going to forget his name all of a sudden. Shit.
Oh, you have told me about him, yes.
Oh,
you
God.
Have.
Walks up and down the aisle of a big crowd, you know, and he'll end up looking at every single person, one-on-one, and he'll make this rap, okay? And it's potent. It really is. You can't not look at him, you know? And it's... I don't know how he does it, but it's quite a performance. Yeah. We are one. That's his message.
Yes.
That's his message.
Well, you know, there's a lot going on in Shepherdstown this weekend. Maybe Jan will be joining us at like 7:30 or
maybe
something.
Maybe she will. Okay. So, okay.
You know, she might.
Go ahead. Give us some Shepherdstown spirit here.
Back in the olden days, we used to have our guests at 7:30. She might remember that. Routine.
She might.
But happenings in Shepherdstown. So this weekend is the Back Alley Garden Tour.
Right.
And I have admittedly never formally done it. I have, of course, traversed every back alley in Shepherdstown, right. But I have not bought a ticket to do so.
I remember the one that always impressed me was, she's a professor at Shepherd, Sonia Evanesco.
Sonia Evanesco.
Yeah, hers was beautiful.
Just beautiful.
You know, yeah, really. And I also, there was a couple of others I saw one time. Actually, this yard here, our yard, used to be on the Harper's Ferry. They have a tour, garden tour.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I don't know whether it will be this year or not, but it's beautiful this year. So
I'm sure you get out there and do all the.
I don't, Carol. You know, I can't stand garden. If it was up to me, I wouldn't. I would never mow the lawn. Okay, so you know, I'd let it return to forest. I just don't have any interest in it at all. But I mean, it's not true. You know, I'm opportunistic. I mean, when it's a beautiful day outside, and it's just, well, yeah, I mean, it's great. But all the labor that it takes to bring it into being, oh my God. A matter of fact, Carol not yesterday went out. She was out, you know, digging around in the roots, and she grabbed a hold of some kind of nettle-like plant. I don't know what it was, but anyway, she's got stickers all on her palm this morning.
Oh, it must have been a stinging nettle or something.
Something, yeah, you know. So, but
well, I know that is happening. Have you been to the new revamped opera house yet? I have not.
No, attended. I have not, but I have heard that. It's looking really good.
I can't wait. They had an event Wednesday evening, and I believe that the people that are responsible, and I'm sorry, I don't remember their names, that they did not, that they got an award. They got an award for historic preservation. There was some big event on Wednesday night. So must have followed the guidelines. Jan just texted that she did not get the link.
Oh, well, so what address do you have for her? Because I sent it, okay, but his question is not. Can you look it up a little bit?
Yeah, I'm going to look it up right now. It is.
I have jan.hafer@gmail.com. No, I have it at Ymail.
janhafer52@gmail.com.
Janhafer52, all one word?
Exactly.
Janhafer52. At where?
Gmail.
At Gmail. Yeah, I had the wrong address. Janhafer52. Oh, there it is. Yeah, okay. If you can text her to say that.
I did.
I had an old wrong email. Right. Okay.
I told her you used an old address.
Yeah, yeah. And we don't, you know, like, we're just.
It's okay.
It's fun. It's okay.
She'll be fine.
All right.
You know, did I tell you that Pastor Reverend Broplay is leaving Asbury United Methodist Church?
I had heard that, and I know they were planning on saying an official goodbye to him at the Ministerial Association. But
So there's a big shindig this weekend at Asbury. Actually, the whole weekend is celebrating his
Who's going to take
farewell.
His place? Do anybody know?
Pardon me?
Is someone going to take his place?
That's the part I do not know, and I have not seen a formal announcement about it. My daughter and Jade are doing some music for the event tomorrow, right. So I will be finding out. I'm very curious to know who is going to be filling his shoes.
He never wanted to participate in the Ministerial Association. And I never heard. Well, I heard,
sure,
you know, I ended up presuming.
Knowing Pastor Broplay, it was probably just a time constraint. He is so involved in his ministry there. I can't imagine that he would have any time, honestly.
I got the impression, and I don't know, and I don't remember. It was from the conversations that we had in the Ministerial Association, and I don't remember who said this. But my impression was that he didn't quite see the point of the ecumenical of the effort that would be spent on the ecumenical activities that on balance would not expand the membership of his church. And therefore he prioritized a more I don't know. I don't know what the right words are in ministerial ease.
So the cost-benefit analysis didn't work out in his formula.
But of course that's secondhand and other people.
It's hearsay. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. You know. So we can't admit that as
there's our disclaimer.
Conclusive evidence. You know. We'll have to keep calling him not guilty. So. But it was they did have an active program, and they were obviously raising money. Look at the church they got. They spent a lot of money on.
Oh yeah.
But
he has
oh okay, here's Jan.
There.
Jan's here now.
Nice.
All right. Then well, let's pretend we all woke up late. And anyway, oh my gosh. There she is. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. I'm
not,
sorry.
Not I had, much has changed, Jan.
I had a 10-year-old email for you or something. I'm sorry, Jan.
We're all together now. That's
I think I had something called Y-mail. Did you ever have an address?
So old. Yeah. I can't even believe
you
found that. I don't know why it... Anyway.
All right. It's good to see you. It's good to see you this morning. Karen, why don't you introduce Jan's, you know, illustrious legacy. I'll tell a very old story about her, I know, but I might not. Uh-oh. You know, so it's...
Better be careful.
Right. You know.
Well, when I reached out to Jan as with everything she does, she was very graciously receptive to joining us this morning and talking about our lovely town and this little series that John has aptly labeled The Spirits of Shepherdstown. And one of our most positive, endearing spirits is the Miss Jan Hafer. And she... Obviously, people that know her, we wonder how she fits everything into a day that she does. So you can enlighten us there if you feel the need. But we are really excited to hear about what is happening with Shepherdstown Shares and where you are in your gracious giving to our community.
You're so kind. I was just going to pull up the website on Shepherdstown Shares. If anybody's listening and wants to check it out, it's shepherdstownshares.org. And it's always a work in progress because we get behind in the updating of what we do. But I think, first of all, Karen, thank you for that wonderful introduction. But I tell you what, there's a lot of people in Shepherdstown that respond to a call. And, you know, it comes in different times in our lives. It comes with different circumstances. And certainly the most urgent call for a group of us was when COVID-19 hit, the governor shut down all the businesses. I mean, you know, it was a crisis. I think it was March 17th or something like that.
Right.
Anyway, there was a group of us that previous to this crisis had formed a group to help with another crisis. It was, if you'll recall, the shutdown of the government. And people didn't get their checks. And at the time, Marianne Davis, who was running our visitor center, met a woman. She came in and she was in tears and she said, "You gotta do something. What can we do?" And it's funny, she came to the visitor center, but I think it was because, you know, it's always open and there's always somebody, people ask us questions. So she just came in there. And so long story short, people from the Lions Club, the Visitor Center, the Community Club, and some random people in Shepherdstown, which always happens, people, you know, who are concerned about something. met, and they did a food drive. And if you were a government employee, all you had to do was show your ID and you'd get this food. And it worked out of the building that you used to be in, Karen, on Princess Street, which was across from the visitor center. And we fed all these people. And then our mission was over, done. Government opened up, we closed it. And then the next crisis hit, and it was COVID. And the same people got together and said, what are we going to do? And so we said, we're going to feed people. And we started with food cards because we didn't have a pantry. That building that we served out of, had other uses then. And so we just took off. It was food cards. And then as so often happens, the spirit moves people in different ways. And we formed a nonprofit, Shepherdstown Shares. We went from food cards to having a pantry in pretty much a record time. And it's all because the community responds to those in need. And I think the key is everybody will help, but you got to let them know. So we started a Facebook group, and it just progressed from there, and we haven't stopped, and we keep adding services, not just the food pantry, but I always like to say Shepherdstown Shares because Shepherdstown cares. And that is the only reason we are in existence, and we keep going, and we keep finding things how to help people in our community. It's because the community responds to this. So many people have come up to me and other, members of our Shares board and volunteer group. They say, thank you so much for doing this. I didn't know what to do. I knew it was a crisis. What could we do? What could I do? And they respond. And it is just, to me, it's a miracle, And people would say that there's hungry people in Shepherdstown.
Right.
And people don't realize beyond their immediate environment where they are. They think everybody's like them.
Right.
And of course, we know that's not true. I mean, just look at society, look at the world. And so, yes, we say, yes, people are hungry. And it's not, some people think it's homeless people or, people who are addicted to drugs and can't hold a job and whatever it is, they think of the headlines. But it really, in this case with COVID, it was, middle class people who had jobs and suddenly lost them, got laid off, or, they couldn't make their rent, they couldn't make their mortgage payment. And we just said, do that, but come to the pantry for food, save money, we'll give you food. And that's what we do every week. We come once a week, and many food pantries are not able to do that, but because of our community, people can come every week.
So do they get actual food, or do they get a voucher of some sort?
We went from the food cards because we thought that really wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And to start asking people for food as well as money, we would, get more bang for our buck. So, yes, it's in the pantry at Trinity Church on the corner of Church and German, Shepherdstown.
Sure.
And we're 3 days a week, 3 evenings a week, Saturday afternoon, 2 to 4, Monday, 4:30 to 6:30, Thursday, 3:30 to 5:30.
Right.
And we serve the zip code 25443 and often beyond, because our mission statement is so broad. Yeah. That we can basically go anywhere and do anything that we think is a crisis in our community. And first of all, food. And connecting people with services. That's another thing we do. We're trying to build that piece of it up. We distribute Narcan. Let's see, what else do we do? We take groceries to people who cannot come to the pantry. In the beginning, we had a work for workers program where people needed yard work done. And, you know, nobody knew what to do. So we just advertised it. We hooked people up. We didn't run the program, but we, you know, if somebody made a request and somebody needed a job, we kind of matched them up and then they took it from there. But that's gone by the wayside. People don't need that anymore. So we don't offer it.
Right.
We collect books. We collected money for teachers at the beginning of the school year, because of course there's always articles about how much money teachers pay out of their own pocket
exactly
to buy materials for their classrooms, which to me is such a horrible thing that we don't fund education enough, but teachers have to dig into their own pocket. So we did that. We raised almost $2,000 for the Shepherdstown Elementary and Middle Schools the beginning of the year, and gave it to the faculty, and they decided how they would spend it.
Right.
Stuff like that. I mean, that's you beautiful. Know, it's kind of, it's not random, but if something happens, our board says, can we do something about this? That's basically the way it goes.
How any young people getting involved with the project?
Oh yes, we had volunteers that help in the pantry. They have to be 16, but we've got a few of those. We have people. So far, it's been younger people who come through certain programs. You know, like where they have to do a work, stint with somebody volunteering and. We, you know, if they're DUI program or something, we have them in there. And the middle school in Shepherdstown has, you know, of course, organizations, clubs and stuff. And there's one for, I think it's called Family and Consumer Studies or something. You know, it's like when I was in school, it was called Home Ec, but it's way beyond that now.
Yeah, right.
And they knew about Shepherdstown Share, so they asked me to come and speak to them and talk to them about how they could help. And so I went to the club meeting, and the result of their efforts were that they did a school-wide food drive at the middle school, and they delivered 500 pounds of non-perishables to the to our pantry. And they submitted their project to the state and won first place, and now they want to go on to the nationals, and they're raising money to fund that effort, but it's all because of learning, I guess, maybe on Facebook, that there's hungry people in our community. So we partner. That's another thing we do. We partner with JCCM, Jefferson County Community Ministries, the Blessings Closet. We deliver food that to the rescue mission, because they cook every day. If our food, our perishables don't last from, you know, Thursday to Saturday when we open the pantry again, we take it to, we have volunteers who drive it to the rescue mission, and they cook it up and serve it. So, anything.
Do people
give me an
that,
idea. We'll probably do it.
Do people that contribute, is it actually tax deductible, or people are, there that? Yeah.
Okay. We're a 501c3. It's all tax deductible.
Right.
We partnered with a post office recently. If you live in 25443 zip code, you got a little postcard like this. This is our mascot.
Oh yeah, friend. Yeah, great. Yeah,
it was pulled out of a dumpster by one of the townspeople. She said, "Here, you need this bear. She can be your mascot." So we plopped her on the chair at the farmer's market,
right?
You know, and she, mascot. And what was my point? Oh yeah, 501. Okay, so we did it.
Join the crowd here on that.
Yeah.
What was my point?
Anyway, so yeah, PayPal, you know, check. You can even go to the Jefferson Security Bank, and people bring, you know, the jars of coins and say, here, put this in ShepShares bank account. And they do. I mean,
no kidding. Great.
Oh, that's great. People give us cash on the street. How about this? This is the kind of town this is. Last night when I was at the pantry, one of the volunteers, you know, came up to help, and he handed me a check, and he said, Andrew, on the corner, he passed by the record store, you know, right there on the corner of a church in German. He said, Andrew, the owner, just gave me this to donate to Shepherdstown Shares. Okay, so that happened. And then a client, one of our friends and neighbors, who that's what I call him, who needs our help, came to get food, and he handed me a money order. Now, he is a recipient, and he is in need, and he felt called to get a money order for a small amount, but every penny counts. And he wanted to make a donation because he thought, you know, we were so helpful.
You know, back in 2008, I remember Fred Soltow and St. Peter's was organizing during the Great Recession. They got up to almost to 100 food baskets a week, I believe. Most people came and picked them up. I think there was also a delivery program that they got involved. Mm-hmm. I remember it got bigger than St. Peter's could deal with, and they wanted other churches to get involved at the time. But big a need now as then, or is it a different structured needs now than then?
Well, I don't think, you know, when we formed this because of COVID, I remember Marianne Davis, who is now in New York taking care of her grandson. And that's why I'm president, because she was president of Shepherdstown Shares.
Right, started this thing.
And then she had to go. And so, unfortunately, I was the vice president. So then.
Yeah, there you go. You got promoted.
But
a field promotion.
It's huge. And it has grown, and she had done some research, and she said, you know, the impact of this, I mean, you know, the epidemic could end tomorrow or in 6 months, but we will feel the effects for years to come. And it's absolutely true, because, you know, you don't suddenly lose your job, maybe your home, and then just get back on your feet and everything's fine.
Right.
So, yes. And then there's other things that are happening in the community. I mean, it's been happening all along. Is, you know, one of the things I am passionate about is recovery work with people who are suffering from, you know, any form of addiction. I'm a recovery coach with Grace, headed by John Unger and his wife, Marty Steiner. I got training from that. So, you know, that's on our website too, if you need a recovery coach. And we hand out Narcan, and we did Narcan training, partnered with Alma B, the Appalachian restaurant in Shepherdstown, to anybody in the community. So, you know, it's just these ideas, you see a need and you just try to do something about it as best we can. Sometimes we can't, it's a long-term goal.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah, I think. And Fred started, there are many people, they're precursors, let me say. Thank you for bringing up Fred, because there's a history in this town of helping, of course. Yeah. You know, different iterations, and then things do get better, and, you know, goes away, but it's, we're there in maybe in the form of different volunteers or whatever to come forward and help again. So right now, it's Shepherdstown Shares.
Yeah, I don't know whether you heard this or not, but I heard about 6 months ago that you remember Slats Klug.
Oh first boyfriend.
Yeah, he passed away, I think, about six, maybe last year, yeah, sometime.
He did, yeah. Aww. Yeah. Was he living in New York?
He might have been, yeah, because he had gone to Illinois or Indiana for a long time, and then he was a musician. He put out a couple albums. My Dog Don't Cry. Did you ever hear that one?
Wow.
Yeah, he put out a couple albums,
you know, I just said his name last night in a conversation I was having. It started out talking about Dad teaching a shepherd.
Yeah, right.
Back in the day with Harry Klug,
right.
Dad. And then, of course, I always say, and Slats was my first boyfriend.
Yeah. Anyway, yes. I heard that not too long ago, and I just thought I thought you ought to. I didn't know whether you had heard or not, but
I did not know that he passed. Thanks for telling me.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Shepherdstown just stands out as something quite different than a good part of the rest of the state of West Virginia. And, I mean, both culturally, maybe largely because it's a college town. I'm sure that's an important part of it. But also politically. So, for example, I recently attended a legislative conference. There's a whole effort being made in the FL-CIO to basically change their entire strategy from an offensive stance that appeared to be miraculous and you know, not moving forward. One of those offenses that ends up backing up rather than moving forward. And so the idea of stopping just handing out money to everybody who agrees with the the platform agenda, and because when it can no longer, when you're 20 points behind in the polls, you know, the theory is that you can't win with that kind of gap. And so now, yesterday or Thursday night, the Secretary Treasurer came up and was meeting with our local labor council, and he wants us to find a moderate Republican, you know, meaning someone that will, you know, only cut off your hands and feet, not your head. So I don't know however you want to put that. Anyway, you want to find a moderate Republican that can run in the vacancy appears to be going to be created by Paul Espinoza challenging Ms. Rucker for the state Senate seat. And I said, well, you know, we could say, well, why don't we find it? We've got to find a Democrat. And they said, well, you can find one, but, you know, all the polling we says that that can't win, you know. And I said, well, okay, why not stay a little bit pure, you know, rather than, you know, if the middle of the road is a sewer, do you really want to walk down the middle of it, okay? And he says, no, it is. I said, we're just trying to stop shit from keeping blowing us back, okay? We're not going to go forward. So that sense of frustration, well, somebody who's dealing with, you know, election and races all over the state and the whole situation all over the state. And Shepherdstown just seems so different, you know, in some ways than that sort of sobering, maybe it's sobering reality. Yeah. Do you have that sense of being just an exception to everything in West Virginia or being part of it? You know, how do you think about that?
I mean, I've always felt that Shepherdstown was special, mm-hmm. and since I, you know, grew up there. But it's a miracle. It's a miraculous mix of people who have the courage and the energy with a big dose of outrage to act on things in the community. They feel empowered. I think the people in Shepherdstown, many of them, not all, of course, feel empowered. That's why they go on the wall. I mean, anytime there's an issue, people go to the wall. I mean, I don't know if there's places like that in other small towns. There's an actual spot You know, it's like, what's the place in Greenwich Village that where, you know, you stand, free speech, you know, yeah, you're right. able to speak.
Right.
It's kind of like that. And, you know, when people have that attitude, that they can say something, they can do something, miracles happen. And I think that might be one of the things. And yes, you're right, College Town. I think we have a strong ministerial association, which has really helped. You know, this year during Lent, the organization, each church decided to have their Lenten service as a community service, which just thrilled me. So, you know, right. the first Wednesday, it was at the Presbyterian Church. Everybody in the community for that Wednesday Lenten service went there. And then they made the rounds. And a guest preacher spoke, you know, not in their own church, but in another church. And we couldn't believe it. They said they made a decision that the plate offering would go to Shepherdstown Shares. People were so generous. I mean, the, you know, the churches were filled on a Wednesday evening. How about that?
Yeah, right.
And yeah. All different kinds of, you know, faith traditions. And there we were. Getting a mention. They didn't dwell on us. You know, we were mentioned and then say, put your money in the plate. And we raised a lot of money.
Wow. Wow.
To feed people. Now, you know, to me, that's just one of those little miracles. And I think it's just because people get ideas and they act on them. They feel empowered to do that.
Right.
And in a sort of a faith tradition, you feel called to do it. And so you answer the call. And I have to tell you this little story about the pantry. You know, it's in the chapel at Trinity.
Yeah.
And that used, I'm a Trinity member. And it used to be our little parish hall before they did the addition. And I taught Sunday school in there, you know, a million years ago. And so, you know, we had an altar and cross and, the, you know, and then we had this beautiful bas relief of Mary and baby Jesus in there. And so we cleared out almost all the stuff. And here was this, you know, mother and baby Jesus thing. And we said to GT, well, we still have this, you know, where do you want it? We'll move it. And he said, oh, keep it. So we looked around and we said, okay, we'll put it over the archway in the entrance. And we hung it. Paul Elliott, I think one of our volunteers hung it up there.
Right.
And so we need a refrigerator. You know, this is how we start out. We don't have a refrigerator. Oh my gosh, said out loud. Oh, we need a refrigerator. Boom, there's a refrigerator the next day. This has happened. It's a joke, but there are those
in
faith that say, wait a minute, let me go stand under the picture and offer it up. And this also happened. One day I was out on the porch with a person who is one of our recipients.
Right.
And a volunteer. We have that too. And she was talking about a family member who was near death. And she said, wait a minute. And she turned it, she walked in. I knew exactly what she was doing. She came out, you know, 30 seconds later and said, okay. I said, I know what you did. And she offered up a prayer right there, because almost everything that we say out loud, we get. Refrigerator died the other day. We said, hey, go offer it up. And
wow.
Now there are people who are a big part of Shepherdstown Shares that are not, they don't have a faith tradition or anything like that, you know. And you know, we laugh about it. We laugh at them. They laugh at us. But we all work together, and we all have our paths to solving the problems. And one of the paths is that saying it out loud in the chapel.
Right. You know, the Quakers were meeting in the chapel there for almost 2 years, I think, until they moved over to the train station. We're almost past the point where
ask Jan what it feels like for you personally to have come full circle at this point, because for those who don't know you, this is your town. This is where you grew up, and you've had many journeys since then, and you came back.
Yeah. Well, I'm one of those people that I don't always think things through, but I get a feeling, I get an inspiration, a vision, you know, that kind of stuff. And one day this is when I was living in Fredericksburg, and all of a sudden I woke up and I said to myself, I'm going home. I'm moving home. I did not know why. I had no reason.
Wow.
Hadn't seen any, why did I say this out loud? And I just felt that I had to move home. And so instead of moving back to Montgomery County, where I'd been for, 20 years, I thought, I'm going to go to Shepherdstown. And within a week, I found my house, and it was just word of mouth. And I moved in, like a couple of months. And why? I still didn't know why.
You're still figuring it out. Right. That's beautiful.
I came home, and I think coming home with the way things have gone in my life, I am able to. A big part of my life is service now. I'm retired, and this is what I'm called to do. This is what I want to do. This is what I do. And I'm so glad that I took that first step of moving home and not knowing why. But I do think things were, I was able to see things in my path that I thought I should respond to. And how lucky I am that I could do that.
It's charmed. There you go. By the way, we're at the hour point here, and I don't know anybody that listens to the podcast over an hour. So anyway, we probably should.
I got my email now, John.
I got the right one now. I got the right one now. By the way, if you see, is GT still serving
Yes, he's going to retire, but I have to say, when I approached him, because we had approached the other churches about a pantry space. Nobody had any room.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to GT, and I thought, oh, no, that's not going to happen. The chapel is used. I said, GT, we need a space to open a food pantry. How about the chapel? He went, I've been wanting to do that for 20 years. Yes. It will always be the food pantry, and here we are.
Right. The things that GT has wanted to...
He took something off of his list of to-dos.
Yeah. That's like there's actually an old joke there about with GT about the things that he wanted to do, that he never mentioned. Okay.
just to sing his praises, and people in our church joke about it, but say... you'll never hear no from GT. I mean, if you ask him for something, it always is yes.
That's right.
The answer is always yes.
Mm-hmm.
And long before the pantry, John, you just said that the Quakers were in there. There are all kinds of organizations. Narcotics Anonymous had met there for over 30 years in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very worried about them. They would be displaced. But GT said, oh, well, they can use a parish hall. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I went, kidding. I said, thank you. And so there's that. And then a few people know this, but, it used to not be locked, the little
I remember, chapel, yeah.
Because people could take shelter in there when they needed to.
Mm-hmm.
Homeless people. And that happened all through. There's kind of like this unspoken thing, but people knew, and they... Right. In there. So it's always been used for good, and now it's it forever will be the pantry, according to GT, and he's going to retire next year. So
is he now? Does he have to leave town? Like some of these ministers, you know, the churches won't bring in a new guy, because if the old guy sticks around, then none of the pastoral work that he's done for 20 years, nobody will want to go see the new guy. They want to see the old guy, you know. And
he's not supposed to come back to church for a year.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Give the new person a chance to, you know, sink some roots, I guess, I suppose. Right. Well, Jan, it's been just absolutely wonderful having you on. It's great to see you again. Thank you so much. You've inspired me. I think I might call GT and see if we can get him on too, you know.
I'll call
him. You know, okay. I love working with him.
Yes, man. He's a yes man.
Yeah. Well, he's an interesting guy. Yeah, right. Anyway, is his wife still doing stuff with horses?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. They're not anywhere. They have a farm.
Yeah, right.
They're sticking around.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Dan.
All right. And take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next. Bye-bye.
Amen.